Despite the death of its leader, Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, in what was said to be a dramatic US special forces raid in Syria's Idlib province, IS is likely to persist under a new leader already chosen, experts forecast. And it'll still be using its model of tying the global ideology of a caliphate to local grievances and objectives of adherents around the world, including in Southeast Asia. But it is difficult to predict, the experts say, whether al-Baghdadi's demise will trigger retaliatory attacks in the West. I've been canvassing the question of what comes next for IS with Katia Theodorakis, who's researching jihadism and terrorism ideology at the University of New South Wales Australian Defence Force Academy in Canberra.
I mean, of course, this is a significant loss for ISIS beyond the expected rhetoric of Donald Trump, who would blow this up to make himself look good. He was the caliph of a caliphate. And now that the territory was gone, they had a caliph still that was in hiding, and that contributed to this narrative of resilience and perseverance. And the fact that he's now been killed has put a dent into this narrative. But they were preparing for that because they knew that it was inevitable that at some stage he may get killed or captured. It's most likely that they'll see it as a victory because he didn't get captured and he exited in a martyrdom operation, how they would frame it, which they can then claim as a victory because he's attained access to paradise.
And is it likely then, do you think, that this will fuel further attacks in the West, revenge attacks perhaps?
It just depends on opportunity, I suppose. It would make sense that followers would do that. When you kill a leader, often who's left are the foot soldiers, and they will have cruder methods. And especially when someone, an Islamic State sympathizer in another place, feels very outraged by that. And he feels like, and in this current age of low-tech terrorism, where you do not need to be connected to a network, you can conduct an attack just by driving a vehicle into a crowd or just getting a knife or doing whatever you can, how Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have advocated. There's always that possibility, but there hasn't been, statistically, there hasn't been a huge trend in retaliatory attacks after leadership decapitation.
It's clearly a very different organisation, isn't it, to the days of the caliphate? What kind of organisation is it now and how does it operate? How many fighters are there?
It's hard to tell how many fighters there are because one needs to make a distinction also between sympathisers, between active fighters, between supporters, between women who will carry networks. It would depend on the local affiliates, and the numbers are fluctuating. For example, it's estimated that there's about 2,500 to 4,000 fighters in Asia, with another 3,000 to 5,000 in across what's called IS Khorasan, Afghanistan, reaching into parts of Central Asia. But those numbers fluctuate. Across the Middle East, I think there's an expectation of maybe a few thousand at the moment, maybe 3,000 the most.
And how do they operate? Are they linked? Is there a sort of a common cause being shared across them, or are they very much independent?
There's definitely the ideological glue that connects them all, where they're trying to establish a caliphate. That's still the overarching goal, the global goal, so to speak. But then it's kind of this hybrid phenomenon, what's called localism, where you tie very local objectives with immediate political and military outcomes. You tie that to an overarching global ideology and some global goals of a caliphate, and they're often a lot more abstract and you won't be able to reach those global goals. We don't really know the level of adherence of a lot of affiliates and how many people they have who are just supporters or who are fighters. But I think generally they went from literally having a proto-state in the Middle East with a functioning state structure. They were collecting taxes. It was a place where you could take your families, where you could migrate to, and that was unprecedented. And they tried to replicate that in Southeast Asia, in Marawi. But both of those physical caliphates, so to speak, they're gone. And what we now have is a global networked insurgency, and fighters are trying to go, they're trying to find spaces. Usually it's where governments fail to reach all of their citizens, where they can't deliver services, where there's vacuums. That's where they try and gain a foothold in various ways. And that differs from situation to situation.
And back to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, found in Idlib, very surprising because that's al-Qaeda territory. The New York Times reports that it's heard that he was there for over 2 months. How might he have been facilitated to go there?
There's a few different theories on that. One was just he was very desperate to find a place of safety, and this was not his natural go-to. It would have been more logical for him to stay in other parts where there weren't so many rival factions. So it's not the most intuitive place for him to be, but I think it shows his desperation. There were also reports that he'd already nominated a successor. He was apparently ailing, or he'd been injured in an airstrike, and that he wasn't physically up to the task of the day-to-day running of the caliphate, and that he had appointed a former soldier from Saddam's army that was very much accustomed to sort of the brutality and the repression that the Islamic State was famous for, and that he was also in negotiations with Haris al-Din, and that there was going to be, if not a deal, that there was going to be at least some sort of peace or agreement that they would be able to coexist or merge certain parts of it. And there's always the option that certain elements of one group would radicalize, and then they would splinter away and form another group or subgroup with the Islamic State, which is often what's, for example, happening in Afghanistan, that the very radical elements of the Taliban will jump ship and go over to the Islamic State, even though there's rivalry between the Islamic State and the Taliban in Afghanistan.
So even with Baghdadi's passing, there's still a lot to watch out for. Katia Theodorakis, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you.
Katia Theodorakis, who's researching jihadism and terrorism ideology at the University of New South Wales, Australian Defence Force Academy.